The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Continuing with Part 2, The Yoga of Integral Knowledge, Chapter 9, The Release from the Ego, on page 361. For the disciple of an integral yoga, there can be no hesitation. As a seeker of knowledge, it is the integral knowledge and not anything either halfway and attractive or high-pinnacled and exclusive he must seek. He must soar to the utmost height, but also circle and spread to the most all-embracing wideness, not binding himself to any rigid structure of metaphysical thought, but free to admit and combine all the soul's highest and greatest and fullest and most numerous experiences. If the highest height of spiritual experience, the sheer summit of all realization, is the absolute union of the soul with the transcendent who exceeds the individual and the universe, the widest scope of that union is the discovery of that very transcendent as the source, support, continent, informing, and constituent spirit and substance of both these manifesting powers of the divine essence and the divine nature. Whatever the path, this must be for him the goal. The yoga of action also is not fulfilled, is not absolute, is not victoriously complete, until the seeker has felt and lives in his essential and integral oneness with the Supreme. One, he must be with the divine both in his highest and inmost and in his widest being and consciousness, in his work, his will, his power of action, his mind, body, life. Otherwise, he is only released from the illusion of individual works, but not released from the illusion of separate being and instrumentality. As the servant and instrument of the divine, he works, but the crown of his labor and its perfect base or motive is oneness with that which he serves and fulfills. The yoga of devotion, too, is complete only when the lover and the beloved are unified, and difference is abolished in the ecstasy of a divine oneness. And yet, in the mystery of this unification, there is the sole existence of the beloved, but no extinction or absorption of the lover. It is the highest unity which is the express direction of the path of knowledge. The call to absolute oneness is its impulse, the experience of its magnet. But it is this very highest unity which takes as its field of manifestation in him the largest possible cosmic wideness. Obeying the necessity to withdraw successively from the practical egoism of our triple nature and its fundamental ego sense, we come to the realization of the spirit, the self, lord of this individual human manifestation. But our knowledge is not integral if we do not make this self in the individual one with the cosmic spirit, and find their greater reality above in an inexpressible but not unknowable transcendence. The jiva, possessed of himself, must give himself up into the being of the divine. The self of the man must be made one with the self of all. The self of the finite individual must pour itself into the boundless finite, and that cosmic spirit too must be exceeded in the transcendent infinite. This cannot be done without an uncompromising abolition of the ego sense at its very basis and source. path of knowledge, one attempts this abolition. Negatively, by a denial of the reality of the ego. Positively, by a constant fixing of the thought upon the idea of the One and the Infinite in itself, or the One and Infinite everywhere. This, if persistently done, changes in the end the mental outlook on oneself and the whole world. And there's a kind of mental realization. But afterwards, by degrees, or perhaps rapidly and imperatively, and almost at the beginning, the mental realization deepens into spiritual experience, a realization in the very substance of our being. More and more frequent conditions come of something indefinable and illimitable, a peace, a silence, a joy, a bliss beyond expression, a sense of absolute impersonal power, a pure existence, a pure consciousness, an all-pervading presence. The ego persists in itself, or in its habitual movements, but the place of the One becomes more and more loosened. The others are broken, crushed, more and more rejected, becoming weak in their intensity, limp or mechanical in their action. In the end, there is a constant giving up of the whole consciousness into the being of the Supreme. In the beginning, when the restless confusion and obscuring impurity of our outward nature is active, when the mental, vital, physical ego sense are still powerful, this new mental outlook, these experiences may be found difficult in the extreme. But once that triple egoism is discouraged or moribund, and the instruments of the spirit are set right and purified, in an entirely pure, silent, clarified, widened consciousness, the purity, infinity, stillness of the One reflects itself, like the sky in a limpid lake. A meeting or taking in of the reflected consciousness by that which reflects it becomes more and more pressing and possible. The bridging or abolition of the atmospheric gulf between that immutable, ethereal, impersonal vastness and this once mobile whirl or narrow stream of personal experience is no longer an arduous improbability and may be even a frequent experience, if not yet an entirely permanent state. For even before complete purification, if the strings of the egoistic heart and mind are already sufficiently frayed and loosened, the jiva can, by a sudden snapping of the main cords, escape, ascending like a bird, freed into the spaces, or widening like a liberated flood into the One and Infinite. There is first a sudden sense of a cosmic consciousness, a casting of oneself into the universal. From that universality, one can aspire more easily to the transcendent. There is a pushing back and rending, or a rushing down of the walls that imprisoned our conscious being. There is a loss of all sense of individuality and personality, of all placement in space or time or action and law of nature. There is no longer an ego, a person definite and definable, but only consciousness, only existence, only peace or bliss. One becomes immortality, becomes eternity, becomes infinity. All that is left of the personal soul is a hymn of peace and freedom and bliss, vibrating somewhere in the eternal. When there is an insufficient purity in the mental being, The release appears at first to be partial and temporary. The jiva seems to descend again into the egoistic life, and the higher consciousness to be withdrawn from him. In reality, what happens is that a cloud or veil intervenes between the lower nature and the higher consciousness, and the prakriti resumes, for a time, its old habit of working under the pressure, but not always with the knowledge or present memory of that high experience. What works in it then is a ghost of the old ego, supporting a mechanical repetition of the old habits upon the remnants of confusion and impurity still left in the system. The cloud intervenes and disappears. The rhythm of ascent and descent renews itself until the impurity has been worked out. This period of alternations may easily be long in the integral yoga, for there an entire perfection of the system is required. It must be capable at all times and in all conditions and all circumstances, whether of action or inaction, of admitting and then living in the consciousness of the Supreme Truth. Nor is it enough for the sadhaka to have the utter realization only in the trance of samadhi or in a motionless quietude, but he must, in trance or in waking, in passive reflection or energy of action, be able to remain in the constant samadhi of the firmly founded Brahmic consciousness. But if or when our conscious being has become sufficiently pure and clear, then there is a firm station in the higher consciousness. The impersonalized jiva, one with the universal or possessed by the transcendent, lives high-seated above and looks down undisturbed at whatever remnants of the old working of nature may revisit the system. Udasana, the word for the spiritual indifference, that is to say, the unattached freedom of the soul touched by the supreme knowledge, cannot be moved by the workings of the three modes of prakriti in his lower being, nor can he be shaken from his station by the attacks even of grief and suffering. And finally, there being no veil between, the higher peace overpowers the lower disturbance and mobility. There is a settled silence in which the soul can take sovereign possession of itself above and below and all together. Such possession is not indeed the aim of the traditional yoga of knowledge, whose object is rather to get away from the above and the below and the all into the indefinable absolute. But whatever the aim, the path of knowledge must lead to one first result, an absolute quietude. For unless the old action of nature in us be entirely quieted, it is difficult, if not impossible, to found either any true soul status or any divine activity. Our nature acts on a basis of confusion and restless compulsion to action. The divine acts freely, out of a fathomless calm. Into that abyss of tranquility, we must plunge and become that if we are to annul the hold of this lower nature upon the soul. Therefore, the universalized jiva first ascends into the silence. It becomes vast, tranquil, actionless. What action takes place, whether of body and these organs or any working whatever, the jiva sees, but does not take part in, authorize, or in any way associate itself with it. There is action, but no personal actor, no bondage, no responsibility. If personal action is needed, then the jiva has to keep or recover what has been called the form of the ego, a sort of mental image of an I that is the knower, devotee, servant, or instrument, but an image only, and not a reality. If even that is not there, still action can continue by the mere continued force of prakriti, without any personal actor, without indeed there being any sense of an actor at all. For the self into which the jiva has cast its being is the actionless, the fathomlessly still. The path of works leads to the realization of the Lord, but here even the Lord is not known. There is only the silent self and prakriti doing her works, even, as it seems at first, not with truly living entities, but with names and forms existing in the self, but which the self does not admit as real. The soul may go even beyond this realization. It may either rise to the Brahman on the other side of all idea of self, as a void of everything that is here, a void of unnameable peace and extinction of all, even of the sat, even of that existent, which is the personal basis of individual or universal personality. Or else it may unite with it as an ineffable that, of which nothing can be said. For the universe and all that is does not even exist in that, but appears to the mind as a dream, more unsubstantial than any dream ever seen or imagined, so that even the word dream seems too positive a thing to express its entire unreality. These experiences are the foundation of that lofty illusionism which takes such firm hold of the human mind in its highest overleapings of itself. These ideas of dream and illusion are simply results in our still existent mentality of the new poise of the jiva and its denial of the claim made upon it by its old mental associations and view of life and existence. In reality, the prakriti does not act for itself or by its own motion, but with the self as Lord. For out of that silence wells all this action. That apparent void looses out, as if into movement, all these infinite riches of experience. To this realization, the sadhaka of the integral yoga must arrive by the process that we shall hereafter describe. What then, when he so resumes his hold upon the universe, and views no longer himself in the world, but the cosmos in himself, will be the position of the jiva? Or what will fill in his new consciousness the part of the ego sense? There will be no ego sense, even if there is a sort of individualization for the purposes of the play of universal consciousness in an individual mind and frame. And for this reason, that all will be unforgettably the one, and every person or purusha will be to him the one in many forms, or rather in many aspects and poises. Brahman acting upon Brahman, one Nara Narayana everywhere. The divine Narayana, making itself one with humanity, even as the huma, Nara, becomes one with the divine. In that larger play of the divine, the joy of the relations of divine love also is possible, without the lapse into the ego sense. Just as the supreme state of human love likewise is described as the unity of one soul in two bodies, the ego sense is not indispensable to the world play in which it is so active and so falsifies the truth of things. The truth is always the one at work on itself, at play with itself, infinite in unity, infinite in multiplicity. When the individualized consciousness rises to and lives in that truth of the cosmic play, then even in full action, even in possession of the lower being, the jiva remains still one with the Lord. And there is no bondage and no delusion. He is in possession of self and released from the ego. End of chapter 9, The Release of the Ego, page 367.